Hey, can I have your attention, please? Morning. This is the 9th of May, I believe, and this is the Forest Practices Board meeting. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
And can we start off with introductions of board members and staff, please? Board Member Janicki, would you lead off, please?
Good morning. I'm Lisa Janicki from Skagit County, representing the counties.
Good morning. I'm Bob Gunther. I represent the small forest landowners.
Good morning. I'm Jordan Davis. I represent the general public.
Good morning. My name is Tom Nelson. I'm a general public member.
Good morning. I'm Heather Ballish. I'm the director's designee from the Washington State Department of Commerce.
Top of the morning to you. Jeff Davis with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife.
And the person to the left of me when she arrives is Paula Swedeen, member at large. I am Stephen Bernath, designated board chair.
Morning. Tom Laurie, designee for Department of Ecology.
Carmen Smith, logging contractor.
Good morning. I'm Dave Carrera. I'm a general public member.
Good morning. I'm Patrick Haffer, the director's designee for the Department of Agriculture.
Good morning. I'm Noel Willett. I'm the labor representative, union in timber products.
Good morning. Joe Schrammick, DNR Forest Practices Division Manager.
Bill Ferrister, Senior Counsel, Attorney General's Office.
Good morning. Mark Engel, DNR.
Trisha Anderson, DNR Forest Practices Board staff.
Trisha, would you please give us our safety briefing?
Yes, good morning and welcome to the Natural Resources Building. At this time, if you could silence any noise-making devices that you have, that'd be great. In the event of a fire, alarms will sound and flash. In the event of an earthquake, alarms may not sound and flash. So please drop to the floor and cover your head as best as you can, or go under a table. In any evacuation of the building, staff will lead you out of the building using the double doors in the front of the room. Then the first door on your left, moving east towards the grassy area along Jefferson Street. There, DNR employees are trained and equipped to assist you in checking in and responding to any emergencies. Now, new is that in the event of a lockdown, please be calm and staff will direct any information with you to you. Thank you.
In a lockdown, we're likely to stay in place.
Yes.
And lock the doors and close the windows, etc. Or shades. Okay, I wanted to start off with a few things for the board chair. First of all, at the end of the day, we're going to celebrate Heather's retiring from state service soon, and therefore she is retiring from this board after this meeting. So, Heather, let me find it. There it is.
It says for Heather, right there.
Yeah. So this is it. You'll be getting a plaque as well. You know, one of those nice wood ones. But this is for your service as member of the board from April 2013 till the read this book. So thank you very much for your hard work.
Can I say a few words?
I would love that.
So I want to thank everybody in this room. You put in a tremendous amount of work on some really complex issues. And I just really appreciate all the work that goes on between these meetings and then the work that trying to gather that all together to present it to us and hopefully help us make good decisions. So thank you for that, and thank you to my fellow board members. This has been a real learning experience for me, and I feel like I could still be learning if I was sitting here for 5 more years. I would like to introduce my successor, who officially starts in this position on May 14th. Can you stand up for a second, Ben? So Ben, sir, he's with our Eastern Washington Office of Growth Management Services, and he works with a number of small rural counties on growth management issues. He has an undergraduate degree in biology,
and a master's in urban and regional planning, which I think will be a real asset. He'll be able to understand all those studies that come to us. He came to us from the Department of Health Office of Drinking Water, and prior to that, he worked for the Spokane Tribe. So you will have another Eastern Washington representative on this board. So, thanks, Ben. So please feel free to introduce yourself and get to know him. He's here to really start learning all this and learning the players. Thank you very much.
Another announcement I wanted to make. We've got another long time employee with DNR that's going to be retiring on June 30th. His name is Garth Anderson. He's one of our licensed engineering geologists in our Northwest region. He did state lands work for a long time, and then most recently has been on our geology team looking at forest practices for some time, and he'll be retiring at the end of June. So if you know him, please make sure you give him your wishes. We really appreciate the work he's done over his career here with DNR. Next thing I wanted to talk about just briefly is a cultural resources update. So as you know, we've had some facilitated meetings for the last year and a half, led by Tim Thompson, and it's been meetings that involve both the state and in this terms of the state, in this case, that means DNR and the Department of Archaeological and Historic Preservation, along with the tribal leaders of the state. And I think I reported to you in February that we had a great meeting in February at the policy level, and they had assigned a drafting group to refine the proposals that were currently on the table. That meeting took place this last month. We're editing that information, and we're going to have one more drafting committee meeting and then hopefully a policy meeting to move things on. So I just wanted to make everybody aware of that. There's been
Stephen, may I ask?
Yes.
What is it that they're drafting?
So there are proposals, varied proposals. One is to do some pilot work on how tribes let landowners and DNR know where they would like to have a conversation when a forest practice is proposed. So that's one thing. We have learned more and more as we interacted with tribes that some of the tribes have absolutely no resources to actually respond to forest practice application review. So we're talking about a funding package, a combo of initially maybe a state funding package, and then hoping to increase their capacity in the federal line item. There's also discussion about putting two bodies in our small forest landowner office to facilitate training in partnership with the tribes and landowners, with a specific emphasis on small forest landowners. And we're talking about changing question 9 on the forest practice application to recognize when landowners proactively interact with the tribe before they submit their application. And if so, that means that we don't have to screen it further other than for DAP issues. So there are a number of proposals on the table to move this forward. I'll leave it at that unless there are any questions.
Just one.
There were some exchange of letters between the Yakima Nation and the commissioner in the last few weeks, and if anybody is interested in those, we're happy to share those as well. Did you want to say anything, Dave, or you?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, thank you.
That was a good summary.
Okay.
A lot of work being done there.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
This is just an announcement. Taylor's Checkered Spot Butterfly Report. I know Fish and Wildlife's going to beat me up over this. It's going to be delayed until the August meeting, so usually it comes before this meeting. but it's delayed this time, but we will hear that in August. And then one final note before we go to public comment period, general public comment period, is that we are working for the non-governmental members of the board to eventually get a DNR email address. And this is to help facilitate issues around public disclosure and things like that, and also so that we can begin figuring out how to keep the work of this board separated from your personal business or other things, so that sometime in the future, you'll see that there will be emails for the non-governmental board members that are different than what they're listed right now. So
just got to check.
Yeah, with that, and we'll work with each of the board members closely to we haven't quite got this figured out yet, but we're planning on doing that this summer. So with that, do we have people signed up for general public comment? Patricia? No?
No.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Let's move to...
We didn't get any other
opportunity. Yeah. Okay. We're ahead of schedule. Let's move to approval of the minutes from the last meeting on February 13th and 14th. Are there any amendments to the minutes to be offered? And if not, would somebody please offer a motion?
So moved.
Board Member Nelson is moving approval of the February 13th and 14th meeting minutes. Second?
Pardon me.
Board Member.
So looks like we did have some slight corrections.
Capper. Are there?
There's one page.
Yeah.
In the packet?
Yeah.
In the packet.
Right. Oh, I didn't know that. Are there anything? So you guys, does somebody want to take us through that? Or is there any questions about it?
It's pretty simple, yeah. But as long as the motion includes you.
So it'd be a friendly amendment as amended?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Second.
Patricia?
Who's the second?
Board Member Capper. My brain's still getting engaged on names. All right. All in favor of approving the minute, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Abstentions. Thank you very much. The motion passes. All right, Mark Engel. So while Mark's getting ready, he's going to update us on the ongoing work that we talked about in February as far as preparing all the different products required for the board to initiate formal rulemaking. And as you might remember, we have to have a rule package, we have to have board manual guidance, we need to have all the requirements for the APA and the Regulatory Fairness Act put together before we can either present you with a set of 102. So he's going to provide you an update. I will warn you right now, it's been suggested that we slow down the development of the rule and the board manual guidance to address some of the issues we found. We made a whole bunch of assumptions in February as far as whether we had the data that we needed to do the economic analysis. Ended up the assumptions were wrong. And as a result of the extended data gathering we're gonna need to do, the other What that does is move the economic analysis later in the year, and with that, we lose one of our two economists to competing priorities. So we will, Mark will be talking about an extended time frame. What this does do is provide an opportunity to do more extensive testing of the three alternatives on the ground. It also gives us an opportunity to hear what the results of a pilot validation process might look like. And one of the things I want to talk to the board about at some point this morning is whether, if in talking to board members, what some folks and some of the stakeholders have suggested, that if we had had more time beyond February, we might have been able to get closer to consensus on the three alternatives. So I want to talk about whether we should work on that in a parallel process. So with that, Mark, you want to
talk? Can I ask a clarifying question on what you just said? So you just had come to consensus on the three options. We came to consensus on the three options.
I'm
come to one?
Come closer to consensus on maybe one alternative as opposed to three. Thank you for that clarification.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I'm Mark Engel, Forest Practices Assistant Division Manager for Policy and Services. And as the chair has pointed out, I'll give you a presentation on the water typing system rulemaking, or an update on what's going on. So to start, the board started the rulemaking with a CR 101 in November of 16. But the why, and perhaps we should visit why we're doing what we're doing. In January of 2013, concerns about electrofishing practices under the interim rule were brought to policy, and actually to the adaptive management program in general, by the Services Department, Fish and Wildlife, and the Conservation Caucus. In August of 2015, the board directed policy to develop a methodology to locate the stream breakpoints on the ground, to minimize electrofishing, to improve water typing maps on the ground, and to make a methodology as accurate as possible, to balance the risk of the errors, and to consider the needs of the small forest landowners in developing the approach. So with that direction, policy went off and did a bunch of work. And in November, the board also did a motion directing staff to prepare draft rule language and prepare board manual section 23. So we currently have board manual 13. That's the board manual that complements the interim rule. We have in the rule now, in 222.12090, a placeholder for a new board manual which will help implement the new permanent water typing system rule. It is a manual that does not exist. So we were to develop the language and the guidance and consultation with stakeholders and to be presented to the board. However, and the motion went long, so rather than read the whole motion, it was acknowledged that until the board receives recommendations from policy, staff is not to start that work towards a 102. A year ago this month, in May of 17, the board accepted the policy recommendations on existing approved water type modification form breakpoints, FHAM, which is the fish habitat assessment methodology, and off-channel habitat, amongst a number of other elements to be included in both rule and board manual guidance. The last feature, or the last element that we needed, and not to recap the from last August through February, was options for what would be the potential habitat breakpoint. So in order to fully implement FHAM, you need to locate potential habitat breaks. And at the board's February meeting on the 14th of February, the board passed a motion identifying the following PHP options to be reviewed and analyzed as part of the real package, and I'm calling the real package the, all of the elements that are needed in order for the board to accept draft rule and to implement formal rulemaking through the filing of the CR 102. So that's the rule, that's guidance, that's the cost-benefit analysis, SBIS, and CEPA. The four options are the no action option, which is using the existing rule, the east side option, east side tribal option, west side tribal option, and the landowner option. So what is the status? Where are we right now? In your packet is a proposed rulemaking packet timeline. As I address the rule and guidance, I'll also briefly talk about where are we within this timeline. At present, we are working on draft rule. We have prepared a draft rule for stakeholder review. To date, we've held two stakeholder meetings to gain comments and discussion about the proposed rule. There's been a third meeting scheduled and more if needed. Right now, we're on a timeline to complete a draft rule by the end of June. As far as draft guidance, we, to date, have convened five stakeholder meetings, primarily with technical representatives from each caucus to develop the draft board manual guidance. We currently have a draft FHAM, which again is the fish habitat assessment methodology. We have draft electrofishing guidance, off-channel habitat guidance. We've also scheduled the first two field days to go out in the field and to review the guidance and as to how well we could apply FHAM and how well we could locate the potential habitat breaks for each option. It's really important that we develop guidance that is implementable and repeatable in the field.
So are those dates scheduled?
Yes. The first two dates are May 15th and May 23rd. And we actually have a real good response from technical folks. It's a full group going out on each day. We've also assembled an economist panel or team to begin to address the elements to consider and the analysis methods to use in the preparation of the cost-benefit analysis. I'm putting the cost-benefit analysis and SBIS together, but the first step is the cost-benefit analysis. We have held one meeting. We currently have a doodle poll to make sure that all of the panel can attend the second meeting. The process has started.
Mark, do you want to talk about who all is on the panel?
So the panel currently has David Chertudi, the DNR economist, and Christoph Larson, also a DNR economist, Paula Sardine, John Ehrenreich with industry, and you'll have to help me, board member Lori, it's Kasia, I do not remember her last name, with ecology.
I'm blinking as well, but she's our main economist.
The main economist for ecology. In addition,
I didn't know that.
We have the tribes are going to be present during the conversations, and the lead for the tribe is Jim Peters. That's the current panel.
Thank you.
So I alluded to this proposed rulemaking packet timeline, and this is important because this helps show the where we are and the sequence in which the elements will be developed. So from April to June in the upper left, that's the draft rule and guidance. During this month, we started the cost-benefit analysis and the CEPA and what we can do, but we need to have that full analysis of where are all three, where will all three THB options find the end of fish habitat. That's not done yet. We have identified the validation pilot study. That would be conducted between July and culminate with a report to the board at the November meeting. And then from December until May is where we take we incorporate all the data that we have to date and finalize all of the product. So that, depending on what happens at the November meeting, we may have to revise the draft rule as well as guidance, not knowing what the information will bring. What's important to point out is that we're really striving for transparency, that open communication. We see a high need for to always be in communication and to be in consultation with virtually all of the stakeholders, which really is our normal process for DNR in any rulemaking, is to convene stakeholder groups for both rule and guidance. In this case, we're expanding that to the cost-benefit analysis as well. All of the products before the May meeting will be put out for stakeholder review.
Mr. Chair.
Board Member Nelson.
Just a comment. I don't really have a lot of substantive content comments, but for the future, this is the first time I've seen this, and to get this amount of data right before the board meeting, is there any way we can have some time to look at this before we have to actually comment on it?
Sure, we could take a break if you want.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant, couldn't we have this sent to us like a week ago so we could look at it? Just a comment. Sorry about that.
Noted.
I see I got ahead of myself. So the analysis of data. Didn't proofread that well, did I? Confidence meant time to gain confidence. So we're invoking a stakeholder process, and I also have made note of Board Member Nelson's request, and we will strive to send out all products as they're developed in a very timely manner. We're doing it now within all of our stakeholder processes, for example, in rule and board member guidance. So, and a fish is one of the issues that has come upon us. We made an error. We did not have the data that we thought we did, and so we are using the current water type modification forms, and we're having to kind of remind the forms, look at them again in order to pull out the fish data. The data was not collected during the expert panel PHB analysis. We want to make sure that it's a statewide analysis because we heard a lot of concerns that this needs to be applied statewide and that all of the ecoregions need to be reviewed. And just to remind you, this analysis also includes the anadromous floor. And I got ahead of myself on the convening of the economist panel, and I'm not an economist, so perhaps Board Member Sabine can help me out if I word this wrong. But as I understand it, there's an analytical model that will be used. There's a number of them. They're choosing which model and which to apply for this analysis. And I call it the elements, but the economists call it the key assumptions of the model. And I've listed a number of them that we are currently looking at, making sure that we analyze. It's cost to the landowners, cost to labor, benefits to the ecosystem, including fish. It's the simulation, the discount rates, stumpage prices, rotation ages, and if there's differences between Eastern Washington and Western Washington. So that's where I'm going to pause right now. Because there's another presentation after mine. Are there any questions?
So, can you talk? Thank you. Sorry, I jumped the gun. Can you talk a little bit more specifically about how the end of fish data fits into the analysis? Like, why is it needed? Because I've heard some confusion about the fact that this is not, given the FHAM framework and the use of PHBs, we don't, like, application in the field isn't going to be end of fish anymore. And so I think there's some, like, why was end of fish so important in this analysis, and how does it fit into, you know, your ability to analyze both costs and benefits? And then there's the, I'm assuming this plays a role in SEPA analysis as well.
It does. So we need to use existing data in order to perform this analysis. And under the current interim rule, the end of fish is an essential point that needs to be identified under the current protocol. It is true under FHAM that when we arrive at a set of PHBs, the surveyor finds a potential habitat break, they go above the break, and they sample until they find the first fish. At that point, they stop the sampling, and they go up to the next potential habitat break point. So what that establishes is a stream segment between a PHB and a PHB. We don't have where that first fish would be found. We do have the last fish, which means that we'll know within that segment between PHBs where the last segment of which fish are found. So it's, you're right, it's not a complete application of FHAM as it's intended to be used, but for analysis purposes, it will clearly show us which segment between PHBs had that, the last presence of fish. And so that way we can remotely apply FHAM through a GIS exercise in order to observe and analyze the differences between how the current rule is being applied and how FHAM will establish the end of fish habitat for each of the PHB options.
Board Member Nelson.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment, and Phil can correct me if I'm wrong, but as someone who has done this quite a bit, the current rule that we have is not end of fish, last fish. The current rule is a combination of fish presence, which is done through protocol surveys normally, and then with the so-called Lenny memo added on to it, it's the nearby similar habitat that's just above . So a lot of people are under the misconception that end of fish is what we're using now. It's not. We're using fish use, which is a combination of fish presence and associated habitat.
Board Member Gunther.
Yes, I would like to ask you to give me your definition of adramatus for. What's your definition?
The anadromous floor itself, I will freely admit there is some, we're still working with industry to fully understand their anadromous floor so that we can make sure that when we establish it on our GIS base that it's correctly depicted. So as we understand the anadromous floor from the West Side Tribes is where you start from salt water and you go on the main stems until the point at which you hit 10%. And then any stream associated with that, it goes 10%. As far as the industry proposal, you still start at salt water, you go until, and they were to analyze 5, 7, and 10%. But then there's some additional elements we need to consider for the laterals or the tributaries coming in. And I'm sorry I can't give you an exact definition, but that's how it will be applied as approved by the board at the last meeting.
Thank you.
And to address Board Member Nelson, so the current application is exactly as you described. So you find the end of fish, and then you look at that segment, and if there is no change, if it's reasonable to believe that fish will move, then that is what's currently being applied under rule. But again, for us to be able to replicate FHAM, knowing that the point is to stop the survey when you first encounter a fish and then go to the next PHB, we're having to use the data that we can get and. To date, water type mod forms or the protocols used in order to apply for a change in typing when would find the end, the last fish. So that's the data we're going to use.
Just another comment. I mean, it seems to me fairly logical. I know you just changed the water type mod form, but wouldn't it make sense to change the water type mod form to show him the fish?
Sorry, I had a blip. Could you repeat this?
Wouldn't it make sense to change the water type mod form so that you had to show end of fish?
Yeah, we are. So historically, the water type modification form served the purpose that we wanted at that time. Unfortunately, 15 years ago, we didn't know all the data we needed. Today, we are looking at changing the water type modification forms to assure that we have all the data that we need. So yes, there is an energy going into making sure the forms are current for the needs that we have today.
And there were some.
So I have one comment and one question. And when you were laying out the framework for the economic analysis, I did just want to note, I think there's some benefit categories that probably need to be added, you know, because conserving fish, yes, it's a benefit to the ecosystem, but it's a benefit to the public, it's a benefit to the tribes, and so like that needs to be measured as well. So I just wanted to point that out, because a benefit to an ecosystem is an abstract concept that I think people have a hard time wrapping their heads around. So thinking about all the sectors of the public that benefit from healthy fish populations is going to be necessary to look at.
Yeah.
And then the question I had, I mean, when Board Chair Bernath started calling around and talking about the potential for this timeline to be extended so much, it was it took me aback. Let's just be honest. I mean, a whole year, and sort of not knowing at the last board meeting that we would have that much of an extension of a cycle. And so I'm wondering if you can walk us through like a comparison of what the timeline was that would have gotten us to be able to do what we were going to do with the June meeting, to having that, because I'm frankly, and I imagine the public is frankly still kind of scratching their heads about, you know, what is it about not having the data, and why is it that caused like such a long extension of the timeline?
I believe it's not just the data, it's also perhaps staff was a little bit too optimistic, and I'll start there. Right now, we're having a stakeholder process as far as rural development as well as board member development. We're convening the economic panel, and we're going to go out and field test the guidance for FHAM and the PHBs. We've been on a schedule of every other week for each meeting, which in essence means every week DNR is convening a stakeholder meeting and attempting to make necessary changes and, you know, keep up with the comments, the issues that are coming. So, for example, if we were to hold a rulemaking meeting this week, we would hold a guidance meeting next week. And on top of that, next week would be a day in the field. It's becoming, and a very small group of people end up participating in all these groups. So I would imagine that some of the stakeholders behind me would agree that it's been a little bit frantic, the pace, to be having meetings every week on, you know, alternating between rule and guidance and field review, as well as convening an economic panel. So in part, it was the pace that we had put ourselves on to try to finish within a very short time frame. On top of that, we absolutely need that analysis to know the differences between how the current rule is being applied and what each of the three PHB options would hold in order to be able to perform the economic analysis and to complete a CEPA analysis. So the delay there is very significant as far as those two analyses.
Mark, didn't you give me some numbers that led me to believe it was going to take an additional 7 weeks to sift through the data to find the end of fish data, and then Instead of having 18 weeks to do the economic analysis, it was going to take 30.
Yeah, and both of those numbers are true. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because we miscalculated the time it would take to gather the data, it is a full 7 weeks in order to, we believe, in order to collect the data and to do the analysis. And as far as the complexities of the economic analysis, there was extended time. Again, I'm not an economist, but it does require getting data from other agencies, such as Department of Revenue, in order to complete some key parts of it. So we also had to build in time to work with other agencies to get to allow them to collect data and bring that forward to us. So we were overly optimistic.
Other questions for Mark? Board Member Wilt.
Mr. Engel, when you look at your analytical model on the economist panel, and I see cost of labor, can you explain to me what exactly is going to be looked at there? Are we talking about family wage jobs and the impacts on communities? What exactly are we talking about here?
I will confess I do not know. That's for the panel, the economist panel. And I will say that the list I gave is a rather broad list, and it needs to be further refined. So I know that is an essential element that needs to be looked at. And you know, I could speculate that it's looking at costs to harvesters, to the mills, to the full spectrum. There is quite an impact as you look down. How many points along the way are impacted by a change?
That's the part that really concerns me sitting on the board, is we look at the impacts of the rural communities. We look at the negative impacts that have happened over the years. And I think that's a really important part of this model, is to realize that the big picture, not only on the landowners and the tribes and all of the other stakeholder groups, but when we look at families, when we look at the impacts on communities, that's very important.
Yes, noted.
Other questions for Mark before we move on to the next item?
I assume we're going to have a lengthy discussion on the timing of all this at some point later on.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes. This is, we're going to give you a couple of presentations, then we're going to take public comment, and then have all the time you need to discuss. All right. Thank you very much, Mark. So you're not going anywhere, right? Or no. Yeah, Howard's coming up. Sorry. Howard and Jeff Kirshner is coming up and talking about the validation study and its status. So as you know, unfortunately Hans couldn't be here today, so Howard works for Hans. He's our senior project manager on our science work. And he and Jeff Kirshner and Pat Trotter is going to discuss the status of the validation study. They're going to start off by talking about the status of the larger study and then talk about the pilot.
Good morning, Chairman Bernath and board members. My name is Howard Hammerly, and as you just heard, I am the Senior Project Manager in the Adaptive Management Program here representing the AMPA today, along with two of the science panel members, Dr. Jeff Kirshner and Dr. Pat Trotter. These are our authors on the document, so they will be able to provide you additional information on the contents of this proposed study design. And this is an update. I know that in leading up to this point, there was the AMPA had the plan to have a draft study design to you for this meeting, but the review processes that we've been going through and the review, especially from the independent scientific peer review process, has not been completed yet. And so we are waiting for comments from that group. We'll walk you through all that information. You do have in your packet a memo from Hans Burge, the AMPA, dated May 2nd, 2018, that talks about this PHB validation study and where we currently are. I think I just do it this way. Hopefully, as the intent of the PowerPoint that's on the screen is to mimic the structure that was in your memo to talk about the project, and then they'll walk you through the current status and the currently identified schedule for the this particular project. Okay, I'll do this, and then I'll rely on these other two gentlemen to help me out through here. The study design is a stratified sample by ecoregions, and what that is going to help us do is to put this study into a scale approach at a scale that we can begin to look at and make comparisons between and assess the PHBs on a ecoregion by ecoregion basis. But gathering the data doesn't limit us to do some aggregations, depending upon whether we want to go upscale for that. But we want to approach it in the way of dealing with this at the finest level of resolution on scale as we possibly can start with. As was mentioned earlier in the previous discussion, the focus is really on the end of fish point to start the identification of where the PHBs are. With that finding of the end of fish point, then the plan design is to do surveys, longitudinal profile, habitat surveys, both upstream and downstream from that end of fish point for 200 meters. This will include use of electrofishing to help identify those points and that starting point. A number of criteria, these based upon what was approved by the board at your February meeting, is think of measuring slope, stream size, obstacles, as we're going through an important component of assessing the gradient and width, gradient width combination, obstacle components that are spelled out as part of this study. It also allows for dealing and looking at seasonality to look at how fish might move up and downstream based upon season, but also because it's a multi-year project will allow us to look at that on an annual basis as well. The study, and one we'll get into a discussion later on today in regards to the budget and cost associated with this. The approach is to measure all sites each survey season, and all sites mean we're using seven ecoregions and somewhere between 35 and 50 sites, up to 350 sites, with all of those being surveyed during the normal protocol survey window, as it's in the rule right now. And then taking that and looking at one-third of those survey sites in two other, what the board or the panel believes are biologically relevant season, and we'll talk about that here in a few minutes. So all in one season and then a third in the other two seasons. Each site gets then, because of that, will be sampled three times during that March to June window and at least once in each of the other two survey windows. The proposal for the study design also includes an eDNA component, and this eDNA component is not done over the entire course of the study design, but in the third year, in the last survey year, and it will be done in all three survey windows. This is part of adding the eDNA onto and into the study design is to take some advantages that are available to us in working with U.S. Forest Service at Oregon State University, who are premier individuals who are doing that type of eDNA analysis, and so we can take advantage of that work. The budget is something we'll get to soon, but one of the other aspects of this study design is it's looking at and being divided up into two phases. There is what is being identified as a pilot phase, and then what would be the full validation study phase. In the pilot study, as it's being proposed, and it has the purpose is to test available protocols, and it's really a methodology assessment. Are we using the right methods, and in that regard, using methods that are actually helping us get the data that we need for the overall analysis? Are we collecting it in the most efficient way? Are we doing the process in ways that will help us control cost and meet the schedule? So it's really intended to answer the questions solely on methodology for the study. And we're looking to start that in March for the full validation study in March. So this pilot is important to help us get preparation and be prepared for the full study. The idea, because we want to look at the methodologies, is to look at both less and more complex sites, because the methodologies and how they're going to be utilized can be influenced by landscape characteristics and stream characteristics. So we want to take that in consideration and make sure we understand what it takes for the more difficult sites versus what it's going to take for something that's going to maybe be a little more straightforward to do the work in. And this is going to happen on both east side and west side, as this is a statewide study. It will allow us to analyze data and report back to the board, given the timeline it's going to take. The pilot study would be completed, the analysis done, and outcomes evaluated so that we can bring that information back to the board if there's a member meeting. The last bullet on this is another big component. As I said, this is to help us understand the most efficient way of doing this, and by having a better understanding of the methodology, which ones are working, which ones need to be modified, it will help us refine the overall cost estimate for the project. The budget that has been proposed is based upon the best information we have right now, but as we can find that information, we can certainly refine the budget as it's brought forth even for in future finance. Status of the project at this point, in your packet, Hans had provided that the study design itself, which also includes the discussion of the pilot, was sent out to the stakeholder technical group and members of ISAG, as well as to ISPR on April 6th. We do have comments back from the stakeholder technical group that are being reviewed and discussed at the science panel right now, but we have not received comments on the study design yet from ISPR. The hope was that they were going to come last week. Now the hope that they will be into us this week. And then as we get those and review those and address all the comments, ISPR as well as the technical stakeholders, we can see where there might be similar comments so that we can make sure that we're addressing all of them appropriately and according to what is necessary to be done.
Now, Rod?
Yes.
Would you just, because the meeting today is more public than usual, can you make sure that you hit on what some of the terminology is, like what does ISPR stand for?
Okay. ISPR is our independent science peer review panel. It's done through an agreement with the University of Washington, where we provide documents through the Adaptive Management Program, CEMER process, and they identify scientists who have the appropriate background and criteria in various topics for those reports. And they provide us a very similar to doing a publication process and a journal review and approval. And so it adds quality, it's a quality assurance process, and it ensures the robust nature of the science that we do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I ask a question?
Board Member Janicki.
Thank you. So, you know, I'm so glad you brought up alphabet soup, because sometimes it does get a little bit confusing. But in this study design, you know, particularly on this pilot project, what's the role of CEMER? I mean, it goes to the ISAG or the in-stream group. But does that same information, does CEMER get that body get the chance to opine on what's presented in this memo? I'm trying to recall the flow of information of the way these groups are tied together from orientation, but I just want to make sure everybody's had the chance to, you know, contribute to this process so it becomes, so there's buy-in.
To answer your question, in that given the way this project has been brought forward as a board-directed project through here, it did not and has not to date followed what would be considered a standard adaptive management program process, going to CEMER for a review and approval prior to being sent to the independent science peer review process that we have. The thought, and I'm going to try the best that I can to answer for the HAMPA on this in my conversations with him, it's been a very fast process trying to get this done and through, and on having ISAG and a science advisory group to CEMER have an opportunity, who would be the group that as this is brought into an adaptive management process would probably most likely be the group who would be associated with this and providing comments. That was to help open up the doors to begin that, but we have not asked this to be at CEMER, asked CEMER to provide a technical review and approval for the study design. I want to say for the study design, and the tight time frame. And the board directed the AMPA to put this panel together with this type of expertise and then get it into the peer review process. The intent is, once this begins to move forward, after the study design is approved and all those currently identified reviews are completed, then and the project is implemented and the analysis and report, final report is being done, that will get into the CEMER process. And that will go through a standard CEMER adaptive management program structure, so that they will have a chance to review the final report and approve that final report. Again, after CMR has seen it and approved it, we'll go to another round of ISPR review, come back to CMR. CMR will get to see it again with a final review before it goes on to policy, and then policy to the board.
So just to clarify, Janicki, normally validation studies are initiated by CMR, depending on the priorities set by both CMR policy recommendations to the board, and the board makes those priority decisions through the budget. There seemed to be a desire on this board's part last year to get the validation study going a lot sooner. Normally, you don't do validation studies until the rule is in place, and then you do that. And in this case, there seemed to be some desire on this board's part to move this forward. So if you recall, there was a motion passed last year that asked the adaptive management administrator, along with the science panel, to deliver us a study design. And as Howard mentioned, they are trying to do outreach to the technical folks that have been involved with water typing as requested. And they also included ISAG in that, which is a newly reconstituted in-stream advisory group, part of CMR. But as he said, once the study is out there and we get a report back on the study, then we'll use the normal processes on the back end. But there seemed to be a desire by the board to get this going as quickly as possible. So this was the action the board took.
Yeah, I mean, the fast tracking of it and the lack of consensus, but I remember that, and that was the specific action. I guess in this document that Hans provided, it talks about going back into a CMR, I guess on the broader project, it talks about putting it back into the CMR process. And so my intent as a board member isn't to hijack the entire technical recommendations, and we're using ISAG and the science panel as part of that process. I just want to realize that we've just gone off-roading, and where off-roading may or may not lead us. That's
sure. Remember Nelson?
Yeah, along the same lines, I think one of the concerns, or well, maybe it's not, but it is my concern, is that later on we're going to be asked to allocate, I think it's close to $3.8 million for this. And I have not seen the validation study yet. I've seen Hans's memo on it, but I have not seen the validation study, and I'm wondering who else has seen it, because I would like some more information before I commit to that type of a funding operation. And if it hasn't gone to CMR, and if it hasn't gone to the on-the-ground technical users as we asked for in the motion, I'm a little bit concerned with that. So it lends to the pace at which we're pushing this whole proposal.
Oh, I just
Board Member Sweeney.
I'm glad you asked that question for Member Janicki, and I just wanted to point out that the independent science peer review is also kind of a CMR component, right?
Yes.
And this is going through them as well. So it sounds like in order to expedite this, there's attempts to use the most appropriate portions of the CMR body, but not go through the entire process of decision making on the design, just to get it going more quickly.
That's why I use the word hijack.
No, we hijack. We did actually.
And to respond to Board Member Nelson, that the Caucus Technical Advisory Group that has been working on issues around water typing for the last several months, he did send it out to that group for comment, and we do have comments back from them. and those comments are being reviewed right now. He sent it to ISAG because there were some additional individuals on ISAG who were not part of that technical group, but he wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity to look at and provide comments as well. And I do want to say in a broader sense, as this project moves forward through the study years, CEMER will be getting regular updates on the project. So it's not like we're going to wait until the very end. We have monthly meetings and projects are updated on a monthly basis. So this would have that same CEMER process where those updates would be provided and discussion's going to be held.
I think my question and my confusion was around the two loops that you're doing. It was sent directly to the independent science panel, and I thought normally you would send it through CEMER and through the technical people and get their comments first and then send it to the ISPR. But instead, it went to the ISPR at the same time, and then you're going to take all these comments and revise it and send it through ISPR a second time. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're having a side discussion here, but the comments are, I think, appropriate and correct in your process through there. It is not the typical process, but this hasn't been the typical process from the beginning, and so the concern that the AMPA has, in if this had gone to CEMER for review and out, waited for their approval before it goes off in ISPR, that would add, if it follows our typical process, would add some additional time because it takes us time to get things through that kind of review and get those approval. So to using these concurrent tracks, is a hope to get the same outcome or any good product that has sound science and based upon sound science and is very robust in the time frame that we have. And even now, if you remember the time frame that was identified in February, you were to have the report study design today, but because of these delays that are to some extent outside our control, we're now waiting to get those comments back so that study design can address those comments. And then the plan would be to get you a copy of that revised and updated study design for the August meeting.
Board Member Davis. Thanks.
I appreciate this conversation. I don't know if I'd go as far as saying concerns, but the buy-in part of this is really important, especially given that this will be handed off to CEMER. And so I want to just encourage the AMPA and the process to make sure that they're using the CEMER expertise as part of this too in a meaningful way. Not maybe necessarily the parallel pathway that we've heard about, because I think that helps with the buy-in, that helps with the handoff that's going to come down the road, and that's the process that we, I know this hasn't been a standard process from the get-go, but I don't want to sidetrack our process and our expertise that we have in CEMER, so I encourage that from this point forward, maybe a little more checking in with the CEMER expertise we have, just to make sure that it's a good transition and we use we're able to get to the finish line with the science panel expertise in a meaningful way.
So what I'm hearing from board members is concerns to make sure we do a good job of incorporating stakeholder comments, including appropriate individuals from the science folks on ISAG as we move forward through finishing this study design.
And respond to those comments is that the way we normally would do a review of this type is we get comments in independently from a number of individuals, and we are transferring those to a comment matrix that will identify by line where those comments fit within the document, who's made those comments, what their comments are, the science panel's response to those comments, and also identifying what changes were made or not made based upon the comments as well. And all of that would be available when we're done in the process.
And you're hoping that'll all be done by August?
Yes.
For larger study?
For the larger study and the pilot component, although the pilot has the need to initiate the pilot quickly so that we can inform that the larger study is important.
Is this your last slide? Yes,
this is the last slide.
So can you comment on, let's see, I guess that goes into the next piece. Never mind. All right. Any other questions for the panel? Board Member Gunther.
Yes, you mentioned EDNA. And I assume in the study design, we will know where those samples would be taken.
Yes, the EDNA process in the way it will be laid out into the study design will identify how many need to be taken, both above and below that end of fish point, the methodology on how it's going to be done, how it's going to be handled, and how it's going to be analyzed, and all of that will be, and it will be identified where those locations were that it was taken from.
Thank you.
Board Chair, could I make a comment too? Our company has been involved with the EDNA studies, and I commend you for doing that. I also commend you for putting it out in the third year, because we've been working a lot with OSU. For the board members that don't understand it, this is an alternative to, say, electrofishing, where you take a water sample, which is a lot easier to do than packing an electroshocker on your back up these creeks. And you take a water sample and send it off, and it tells you what species or what groups of species occupy that site. And it's really efficient, but it's not quite ready for prime time yet. And so having it out in the third year, I think, is a smart move.
Thank you, Board Member Nelson. I want to make sure that folks have an opportunity to ask the experts from the science panel any questions they might have, particularly regarding what they're planning for the pilot. Board Member Swedee.
So this is a question for you guys, and it's but it's not necessarily geared towards just the pilot. So I'm pleased to see that the study design includes electrofishing in the different seasons, because that sounds like it's going to address some of the concerns about our current electrofishing season and maybe missing fish, and so underrepresenting fish habitat. But I'm wondering if there's other ways that the study design is going to address or try to distinguish, like if you don't find fish during fish surveys, how can you tell it's because the fish just aren't there, not because it's not habitat?
Well, part of that's going to be with seasonal sanding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, understanding whether fish are there in the early spring sampling period, the summer period, and the fall period helps us to sort of get a feel for, you know, how flow dependent some of these things are. So, yes, I think in that case we do get a feel for where fish are, when they're there, and whether they're not there. So,
yeah, and so I got that you were doing getting at the seasonality aspect, but right, there could be changes from your year. There could be you know, the rule talks about recoverable habitat, and so like, are they not there just because it's not quite good enough yet? But it could be. I mean, are there ways that the study is going to look at other aspects besides seasonality that would cause fish not to be there, even though it might be fish habitat?
For example, annual variability.
Sure, we're going to have things like fires and changes in woody debris and things like that that may influence the end of fish. And that's part of what we do with the survey. Once we've established where the end of fish is with electrofishing, then if there's a difference between the seasons or the year that we in fact survey, we can go back and say, all right, well, what's changed between last year and this year? So that's part of the bar survey.
So are we talking about three seasons, two seasons, what?
Three seasons.
Well, that's all I wanted to say, just three seasons is there. Three different periods.
In 3 years, I mean?
Well, over 3 years.
Yeah. So we get to catch both the seasonality of when the fish might be there as well as the year-to-year variability.
And in the, I guess either or the best possible world outcome or the worst possible outcome is you get a really major change in you know, major storm or something like that that really screws things up. And then
the idea is that blows out all the large weed debris or something.
And the people out in the field don't want that, but being able to analyze something like that gives you a different perspective on what you might find in the field in a normal year. So yeah, but we're trying to get that over 3 years when it's crapshoot weather-wise, but that's the idea.
So can you guys just from a science standpoint just talk a little bit about the pilot and what you hope to learn by November and how that might adjust the broader study plan?
Well, let me give you just one example and I'll let Jeff talk, but one example is most of the focus in these stream surveys has been on being able to identify physical aspects of the habitat. And one of the things that we discovered very quickly when we analyzed all of this historical data on last fish points and things like that was that stream slope, for example, this is my prime example here, stream slope we found had been measured and actually recorded in some of these forms that we were able to look at three different ways. Okay, one of the things we would like to have the pilot study do is to figure out which way is most informative and so that we can make a firm recommendation on that's the way it ought to be done in the field instead of having people do it the way they just kind of, I guess it just sort of evolved into somebody's using their own judgment on what defines the slope at that point. And so we got three different ways of doing it. And it screwed up their, well, it made trying to figure out what was a good data set sort of problematic for us when we looked at all those points. So that's one example. Straighten all that out. So we got a fixed protocol for people using the field. And then when somebody actually goes out there to try to use that provisional protocol, they actually see what we think the protocol ought to allow them to see. Okay. Did that help?
Do you want to add to that, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've talked a lot about is what are the sources of variability when you go to the field? And of course, you know, there's the environmental variability. There's also the differences in how people see things and how they measure things. And then there's the other part about the techniques and whether they're useful or not. So what we hope to do is explore all of those things with a pilot study and see where the variability occurs, whether our methods are good and consistent. Like Pat said, you know, we've got forms with three different gradient measurements on. How do we do it that's the best way? So, yes.
Yeah, that makes the actual full study a whole lot more effective, more efficient and effective. As they're just going to hopefully go out and feel doing it the same way and get results that are comparable.
So just a little factoid. We tend in our board manuals to provide guidance on how to do all these things. One of the few things we don't have in our board manuals is how to do stream gradient. So therefore, what we found when the science panel was reviewing the data last fall, it was done three different ways, which means you got to be careful when you get into the apples oranges.
Yeah, each of these ways measured three different things, and so we had to winnow out what the data analysts were trying to use.
Right. Any other questions from the board members for the panel at this time? I'm hoping you guys can stay for a little longer as we discuss this further in case we have any more technical questions. Thank you. Mark?
I'm sorry, I had one.
Oh, sorry.
Quick question.
Board Member Davies.
I just wondered if this study design includes all of the elements that you were hoping for. I know that we're on a timeline and a budget and all of that. I just wondered if you feel really confident that you were able to include all of the elements that you'd like to see.
I think, I'll speak and say yes. And the other thing is we've already gotten comments from stakeholders back, some good comments about things that we might consider. We're trying to figure out how we're going to incorporate those things. But yes, I think we're in good shape now.
Any other questions from board members? Okay, thank you very much. So based on your update on how the actual process for working on the rule and guidance and other aspects of rulemaking, plus the conversation just now on the validation study and the pilot for the validation study, Mark's going to come up and suggest some recommendations to the board where we might go. Then we're going to take a break, listen to public comment, and then we'll have discussion and decide whether what direction we're going to go from here. And so what I would ask is that during this part of it, we are asking questions of clarification of Mark, and then we can have the discussion after the public comment period.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So to continue my presentation, you've now heard the overall status of the draft rule and your guidance. We've talked about the pilot study and the benefits that it could bring to help inform the rulemaking process, such as when they go out and look at the methods in order to identify the PHPs, if that could inform us in our guidance within the board manual. We're going to look at techniques such as stream slope or gradient, and we hope that that will help us to understand how to find those things in the field and give us a good methodology to make sure that when we write the board manual guidance, which is for general practitioners as well as the surveyors, that they have a good understanding on what these things are and how to find them in the field. In summary, staff recommends the process be slowed down to assure full stakeholder involvement and a transparent process is applied. The board does get the benefits of the pilot study. Additional time is given to field review the FHAM and PHP, and by that I'm saying after this month, May, and possibly June of this year, but with more additional information in November to go out and again test the guidance next March and April.
Mark, I think you want to advance your slide.
No, I'm there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To help us fully vet the preliminary cost-benefit analysis and SBAS. So,
that's what I'm saying.
staff recommendations, bring the water typing rulemaking package to the board at the board's May 2019 meeting. Approve and fund the validation pilot study with a report to be delivered to the board at your November meeting. About to be signed out. Can't see this, but there we go. And to present a fully scoped validation study to the board at their August meeting. After stakeholder comments are addressed, and the study goes through a second ISPR review.
I'm sorry, Mark, would you just go back? Sorry.
Sure.
So is that, is number three a decision point for the board?
That would be a decision point.
Okay.
So just to clarify, we had a motion that asked for the validation study to be presented at this meeting. So if we do anything today, it's moving the deadline out, recognizing that ISPR didn't get back to us as quick as we had hoped.
Patricia. Peter's acting. So I'll keep going.
It's, I can't do anything. Can you hurry up? I got 3 minutes.
Okay. In your data package, you have a copy of my presentation. I'm going to keep going. The computer is not cooperating. I'll move over and I'll be able to take it off. So this is a recap of the presentation at last time. So what this means is that the May 2019 meeting, the board will consider the rule proposal, which will include the analysis for each set of board-approved PHV criteria options. Upon board approval, staff will file a CR-102, which is the beginning of a formal rulemaking process, which includes public hearings. We will coordinate for the end of the CEPA review with the final public hearing, so that we'll give a full, gather full comments for both CEPA as well as the proposed rule package. And by that, that's the rule, as well as the cost benefit analysis, SBEIS. And then CEPA would be separate, but they would all end at the same time. At that point, then staff prepares a concise explanatory statement, which is prepared to address all of the comments received during the formal rulemaking process. We will do the long-term application analysis, which is essential for small forest landowners. And we will put together a rule implementation plan. Part of that plan is training. How are we going to disseminate the new rule? How are we going to get out training to folks and prepare them for when the rule becomes effective? At the August meeting, we'll review all the final products, and you will approve them through the filing of or directing staff to file CR-103. It's a rulemaking order. The concise explanatory statement is finalized and distributed, and then the rule becomes effective either 31 days after the filing or a later date as specified by the board. In this case, we'll probably go for a later date because then it'll allow for full training and preparation of everybody to implement the new rule. So with that, to revisit what our recommendations. It offers some potential motions for the board to consider. The first is to approve the validation study to be completed in the summer and fall of 2018 with a report to the board at your November 2018 meeting. To amend the water typing system rulemaking timeline to allocate the time needed to complete all of the materials for the board's, and I understand it's May 8th, 2019 meeting, and then to request the AMPA, or the Adaptive Management Program Administrator to present a fully scoped validation study to the board for approval at your August meeting.
So I'll just comment. I know there are concerns about this elongated timeline. Fully expect to hear from the public regarding some of those concerns about basically leaving the current rule and board manual process in place for another year in the 2019 field season. So, and then the question also that I'll put to the board at some point is whether there's also opportunity to refine some of our proposals. So with that, any clarifying questions from board members before we go on break?
Yeah, I have a question, Mr. Chair. Actually, it's for Mark. I have not seen the validation study. None of us have seen the validation study. Who wrote the validation study?
I believe the validation study was prepared by the expert panel.
Okay. And I guess this is more of a comment. We're being asked to take action on a proposal. I'm going to have a lot to say about the timing later on, so I won't get into that. But we're being asked to take an action on a proposal I've not yet seen. And point number two, this afternoon we're going to talk about the CMER budget, which has a huge number in it for these projects. And I'm reluctant to make those types of decisions without actually having seen this document that we're all talking about here. Maybe I'm the only one that's uncomfortable with that, but I would like to at least see the validation study, not just a memo about it, before I take action on it, if that's at all possible.
So we can do one of two things, Board Member Nelson. We can, there's an 18-page draft study plan that we would be happy to copy and provide to you after the break, or we could just copy the 3 pages of what we're asking you to actually approve today is the pilot. There's 3 pages out of the 18 that describes the pilot piece of it.
I'd like to see both, actually, if possible.
Okay. Board Member Sudeen?
So I just want to ask a couple clarifying questions following up on Board Member Nelson's questions and your clarification. So today we're just being asked to approve moving ahead with the pilot study. There's a process underway to incorporate technical stakeholder comments into the larger study plan, and that's in process. So if we see a draft of the big validation study plan, then we need to take into consideration that it's not final because it's still undergoing comment incorporation and still has to go through ISPR, and we're not being asked to approve that until August. Is that right?
Right.
I just want to...
Yeah.
Okay.
But we are being asked to approve the funding.
The funding for the whole study?
And we have not got the ISPR comments back yet.
So the... We, and we'll talk about this afternoon when we're asked to approve the FY19 budget. So if you recall, we were provided a 17-19 biennial budget, and that was, we approved that, I assume, last year. What CMER is bringing us today, or policy rather, is a refinement of that budget for the second half of the biennium. And so, I mean, that's certainly, there is an item in that budget that funds not just the pilot, but the site selection and the first field season of the validation study. Assuming we get to agreement on what that looks like. So we can certainly have that discussion at that time. Do you want to add something, Joe?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just in case what you just covered needed to be covered, I thought that would help Mark out here.
Thank you. Any other questions from board members, clarifications before we break? Okay, let's take 15. Let's start up again at B 1050. Thank you.